some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. That's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just burst your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on, always look at the right side of life. Well, life is quite absurd, and death is the final word, and you must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin. Give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow. So always look on the bright side of death. And just before you draw your terminal breath, life's a piece of shit. When you look at life, it's a laugh, and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember the last laugh's on you. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. Come on, boys, cheer up. Always look at the bright side of life. Always look at the right side of life. Worst thing could happen at sea, you know. I mean, what do you got to lose? You know you come from nothing. You're going back to nothing. So what you lost, you lost nothing. Nothing will come from nothing. You know what they say. Cheer up, you old bugger. Come on and give us a grin. We see at the end of the film, incidentally, the record's available in the foyer.
Well, there you go, boys and girls. This is this is Freya's Day, Friday, here in the bunker. And that was a Monty Python song. I hope you watched The Life of Brian. If you haven't seen The Life of Brian, you got to get it. Yeah, that's for the she-wolves, and yeah, the guys too. How about that? Hey, the date is the 31st, the last day of January, and if you're going to get it done in January, you've only got a few hours to do it. So get your ass in gear or prepare for February. How about that? And get your donations in for the radio show and get more people signing up and more donations, and we'll have more projects, and we can share them with you, and I think you'll like some of the things we're going to do or try to do. Got another phone device coming in here I picked up used on the internet. Should be here any day, and once I get that plugged in, I'm going to tell you people that if you want to talk personally to Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, between, say, about 10 o'clock to about 1:30, I'm just about always in here, sometimes a little before that and sometimes a little bit after that. But that'll be the 574-267-5036 line. And people always saying, I want to talk to you. I got things I need to know. Well, that'll be your chance. That'll be your chance.
No more. They're not going to burn us down no more. They're not going to shoot us down no more. Because if they do, we're going to do what Mike did. We're coming at him with everything we got. And I'm saying to Consolidated right now. We got to do any more burying in the graveyard. They better get out their shovels, because we're through taking punches. You don't win a fight taking a punch. Nobody ever won a fight taking a punch. You see what it says? This ain't a bunch of letters like any other union. It says fist. And that's what we are. Every guy in here, a fist. One fist. One fist. One fist. What are you?
Well, are you an Aryan fist or not? A lot of times you got to keep that fist curled up in your pocket for the right time, but always be prepared to use it if you need to. Pull that fist out and use it. And I don't mean on some lowly street person sitting on the corner over a heating duct. You know what I mean. You know what I've talked about all these years. Yeah. Hey, Rogue Progressive, you got any weird religion stories this morning?
Yeah, pretty much. I may repeat it all for the late night audience, but this group knows why we do church night on Wednesday nights. It's kind of a throwback to the old prayer meeting Wednesday night stuff. This is a very interesting story for church night. I really like this. A Michigan woman, an artist, has created the Last Supper, Da Vinci's Last Supper. And everybody's there, including Jesus. And she did it out of laundry lint. Yeah, it's not some weird new Da Vinci code. It's a massive painting kind of thing, only it's not done with paint. It's 14 feet long and 4 feet high. And it took the artist, Laura Bell, about 200 hours to make. And now it's a new addition to Ripley's Believe It or Not collection. A spokesman for Ripley's Museum said the painting is everything Ripley likes in a piece of art. He says, quote, "We have smaller lint art pieces in our collection, but what hit us about this one is its immense size. That, combined with the amazing color she was able to get from natural lint out of her washing machine filter, to the details of the characters, make this one great piece of art, albeit a very non-mainstream piece, artistic endeavor." So hats off to Laura Bell for the Last Supper in laundry lint.
Well, thanks, Mr. Rogue Progressive, for that report on the lint coverage of the Last Supper. Most people don't know what the Last Supper represents. It's the zodiac. And if you'll notice, there's, three or four groupings of three or four people in each group. And then Jesus in the center, representing the sun, and this is all representative of the seasons of the year. Most people don't know that, but Da Vinci knew it. I used to have that picture around here in the bunker just to remind me of the astrological representation of that painting, but I've lost track of it here someplace. Well, let's get a report on some new ammunition you might be interested in. How about that?
On here in Atlanta with the Snowmageddon thing that we had with the ice and the traffic. I guess you saw it on your network news. They've been carrying it a lot, if you watch network news. Anyway, back to this new bullet. This company, Advanced Ballistic Concepts. You like that? It's a concept. A new type of ammunition allows shooters to fire one bullet and hit a target three times. And according to the manufacturer, they make this statement, because more than 90% of shots fired in life or death situations miss their mark, Advanced Ballistic Concepts has unveiled bullets that split into pieces connected by Kevlar fiber. Jesus Christ. Somebody named Todd Kuchman invented the multiple impact bullet, which his company now sells under the slogan, "Because when your life is on the line, you can't afford to miss." The result is three rounds from one shell that spread out to a diameter of 14 inches for a handgun and 2 feet for a shotgun or rifle. The company president said in this month's announcement of the multiple impact bullet. The company says that this will increase your odds of hitting your attacker on the first try. Or, you know, a kid that finds a gun and fires it at his little schoolmate, now he'll hit the schoolmate.
You know, I've been killing enough people.
Yeah.
We need to make them deadlier.
Of course, you got to consider this, too. When the revolution comes, this might be a good thing to have.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think they have that in mind.
This new bullet, it's called the multiple impact bullet, is out there because the website, the manufacturer website says, because stress and fear increases the risk of firing wild, the new bullets aim to encourage no more panic fire. And Kuchman, the guy who owns this company, Advanced Ballistic Concepts, he says, it's been selling gangbusters. In fact, our website crashed after our initial press release. Well, okay. Here, let me just finish it up. The ammo sells for $49.99 for a 10-pack of 45 caliber rounds. You actually get 30. A 10-pack of 12-gauge shotgun rounds sells for $59.99. You actually get 30. Think about it, Truth Seeker.
Well, there you go. That's a new bullet. Three for one. What, $49 for 10 of them or something like that? Well, I don't see why that would be any better than a shotgun. I mean, are they going to have shotgun shells with three loads in them? I mean, do you want to take out the whole goddamn wall of the bedroom when El Alfonso comes through the door? Jeez. Yeah, $00 should do just fine with a double-barrel shotgun. I don't think you need, if you put the kind that have three in both sides, that'd be six. Well, you don't want to wipe out your whole house. You just want to wipe out the intruder.
Meanwhile, a group of Democratic lawmakers is seeking to revive this gun control legislation, or not legislation, there is none, but the efforts to write some. On Capitol Hill, this after Obama pledged in his State of the Union address last night, or two nights ago, to take action regarding this issue with or without Congress, he said. Oh, please. Come on. Anyway, three Democrats, Alan Lowenthal of California, Mike Thompson of California, Elizabeth Esty of Connecticut, introduced a House resolution Wednesday. And, of course, a House resolution is only that, isn't it? Just a resolution. The resolution calls for renewed congressional action to reduce gun violence in the United States. Here's what the resolution says. Now, this will cause all the NRA gun nuts in America to feel an immediate twinge in their groin from this resolution. Here's what it says. Expressing the sense of the House of Representatives that gun violence is a public health issue, and Congress should enact by the end of the 13th Congress, comprehensive, or 113th Congress, comprehensive federal legislation that protects the Second Amendment and keeps communities safe and healthy, including expanding enforceable background checks for all commercial gun sales, improving the mental health system in the United States, and making gun trafficking and straw purchasing a federal crime. Oh, no! They make straw purchases and gun trafficking a federal crime. Why, the morning after that, there'll be a knock on your door. And it'll be Obama with a whole herd of Muslims there to take your guns. In a statement, Representative Lowenthal said there's no need to lay out another statistic about the prevalence of gun violence. It is, as we are seeing on the news almost on almost a weekly basis, a public health episode. I mentioned before, I had some friends here.
You know, one of the problems with this, obviously people worry about crazy gun violence, but what they don't do is break it down by race. Those that illegally use guns in the perpetration of crimes and crimes against their families and everything else. You'll notice, and I have never seen a breakdown on race, because obviously if they did a breakdown on race, they'd see that a giant percentage of the criminal use of a gun is perpetrated by people other than white people. And I challenge the progressives, because I'd really like to see it. Maybe it'll show something different. But considering that blacks are still a minority, a relative minority, what, 25%? Sometimes it seems like they're 80%, but still, it'd be interesting to see those statistics. So come on, Mr. Progressive, let me know about that. But you see, they won't do that because once we got into the myth of equality, that everybody's the same, and race makes no difference, well, then why would you want to check that out? Because we'd be all the same, man. No, if they put out those statistics, they're going to have to come up with a whole new theory on how to stop gun violence, and you know what's going to be at the front of it? You got to control the thugs and the N-words, or what else you want to call them, plus all these other Mexicanos and mestizos. You'll have to control the people that are doing the killing. I'm not saying there's not a lot of white people who use guns illegally, too, but the percentage per capita is, I assume, is totally off wonk. Well, before we leave progressive land, let's get a little bit more commentary on Snowden from the left. How about that? Here we go.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Releases the documents that were released by Ed Snowden continue to be the gift that keeps on giving. Huh? Right? The Huffington Post published some documents last night in coordination with the Danish daily newspaper Information, which worked with American journalist Laura Poitras. Now, Snowden, Poitras, and Glenn Greenwald have been the three driving forces behind this information that is now common knowledge for anyone who wants to pay attention to it. From that treasonous Ed Snowden, how dare he expose the criminal acts and unconstitutional acts and violations of international agreements committed by the U.S. government. How dare he? Right? Is that the way it works? How dare Chelsea Manning release encrypted information that, when decrypted, shows American gunships for sport shooting people down in the streets? No. Chelsea Manning goes to prison, and the people who pulled the trigger probably got medals. Huh? Of course, we can say that about so many people in positions of leadership in this country. Anyway, the latest releases show that the NSA monitored the communications of other governments ahead of and during the UN climate negotiations in Copenhagen, Denmark, 4 years ago. Now, the document that was released to Huffington Post and the Danish newspaper was portions were marked top secret. Ooh, top secret. It indicates that the NSA was monitoring the communications of other countries ahead of the conference, and that the NSA intended to continue doing that throughout the meeting. We don't need no stinking permission. Posted on an internal National Security Agency website on December 7, 2009, which happened to have been the first day of the Copenhagen summit, this document states that, quote, analyst here at NSA, as well as our second party partners, will continue to provide policymakers with unique, timely, and valuable insights into key countries' preparations and goals for the conference, as well as the deliberations within countries on climate change policies and negotiation strategies, end quote. Well, damn and hell, that looks like they just about had all the bases covered. NSA is saying, we'll give you everything. We know every time these people go to the John. We'll give you all the information. Oh, by the way, second party partners, that refers to the intelligence agencies of the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, with which the U.S. has an intelligence-sharing relationship. The common denominator there is, of course, they all speak English, except one province in Canada where they speak French. But no matter. You notice the French aren't included, nor the Germans, based on Ed Snowden's leaks. quote, when a smartphone user opens Angry Birds, the popular game application, and starts slinging birds at chortling green pigs, spy agencies have plotted how to lurk in the background to snatch data revealing the player's location, age, sex, and other personal information. New York Times, end quote. Now, the only redeeming part of this, my addiction, and the fact that it's being picked up by the NSA, is this is all in Molly's name. So they're going to be spying. I don't know why this is redeeming. It's not. But Molly doesn't have a real bad pattern. I mean, she only goes to a couple places. She goes to school, to her dance lessons. She goes to choir practice. She goes to Girl Scouts. Maybe the NSA will pick up a pattern there and say, oh, my God, watch this kid.
Well, let's go to class here, a little bit of class. We're going to go back a few years again to the book Siege, boys and girls. Get ready. Got your pencils? Here we go. Now, you got to remember, this was written in the 80s. Yeah, and so state of emergency. This is under the chapter Armed Struggle. Are you among the conventional survivalists with a few guns, a few rounds of ammo, some medical supplies, and maybe a CB radio, and enough food and water for anywhere from 2 days to 2 years stored away? Are you one of the rugged individualistic types who, as long as he owns his firearms, swears, by God, that this is a free land and he's a free man? Or are you one of those intrepid ones who will say, he'll shoot the first nigga that comes rampaging into his front porch? In other words, do you count yourself among those rednecks who are smug in their sense of right-wing style readiness? If so, you can stop reading right here. Years ago, I wrote, after headlines appeared about the discovery of Wesley Swift's hideout and arsenal that included everything from automatic weapons to armored vehicles. You know, I've mentioned this stuff to you before. It goes along with the Robert DePue's organization. It was a separate organization, but they were running in parallel during the 60s. That is, Swift, who died in the late 60s, could have foreseen the day when, after his death, all his extensive preparations were unearthed and captured by the system. And like I told you, they're still finding some of these weapons and ammo out there in the desert that were buried by these California Rangers. Without a fight, that surely he would have viewed it as the end of all hope of resistance. He had expected a full-blown invasion of the United States by Russian and Chinese troops. And I know of no group or individual who was as well prepared for the worst emergencies as was Dr. Wesley Swift. The emergency never came. Swift died a natural death, and the government scooped up his vast arsenal. Well, they didn't get it all, because hikers and bikers that go out into the desert still, from time to time, stumble onto stashed ammunition and so forth, and grenades, and you name it. But, I lived through that time, and I remember the Secret Army organization in San Diego and people like that. And some of these guys were going up into the mountains in East San Diego County and over into Arizona, and they were preparing for the big deal. Well, the big deal never came. They got old and died, you know. So even Commander Rockwell was positive that the blacks were going to go on an all-out rampage before the decade of the 60s was out and touch off the race war that had so many talked about in those days. In 1967, the year of his death, he had begun to organize what he called the White Guard on a quicker, more informal basis than the stormtroopers. So sure was he that hell would break loose that very year. But a massive welfare payoff, a general caving in of white resistance, and perhaps even a shift in enemy strategy kept the conflict from coming out into the open. It was just about 2 years ago that a number of otherwise respectable, credible right-wing groups were issuing super serious, straight-faced accounts of how in the summer of 1983, Ronald Reagan would die in office, the economy would fall right through the bottom, and the coloreds everywhere would go berserk. Does that sound anything like you hear on the right wing and Alex Jones today? Same old stuff. And then there was the ever-popular Peter Beter. I kid you not, his name was Peter Beter at the time, who said they had the Soviets had atomic bombs buried in all the harbors, important harbors around the country, and could set them off by remote control. And believe it or not, there were thousands of right-wingers who swore he was right and followed right along and kept him in money. This was the prediction from the experts, who were thereby, unfortunately, placed their reputation on the line. And I told you about Congressman Utt, who was a good guy in Southern California, but he got hooked into the deal that the Chinese army was training in Mexico and getting ready to invade the United States, which has come around again a couple of times. And then, of course, the Peter Beter also had that the Russian troops were coming across the North Pole and going down through Canada and going to attack. You see, these right-wing guys, you know, these con men have been around for years, and they're not all con men, they're just nuts. I mean, you know. I recall about the same time one particular provocative and sensational sheet released, not by what I would call kooks, but by a major movement standard bearers, to the effect that in the upcoming weeks, the Antichrist himself would seize all television networks and automatically turn on all TV sets that might be off at the time and mesmerize any and all whose glance was caught. Thank God the movement has a shorter than hell memory span, otherwise that one would be impossible to live down. There's a footnote down here. I still put up with this stuff today. I get sent crazy-ass stuff all the time. And there's crazy-ass radio shows out there that pretend to be even racial. They put out all kinds of crazy-ass stuff. Down here at the footnote says, far-right racial religious leader who assembled the California Rangers, a secret guerrilla warfare unit, which was prepared to survive Armageddon. Swift died in 1970, but 6 years later, his secret arsenal, consisting of 20 tons of paramilitary supplies, was found by chance and seized by the police. Well, believe me, they didn't get it all. It's all over the place, and they're still digging it up. Though no fault of their own, Commander Rockwell's, quote, "The Jews are through in 72, never materialized," and 72 came and went uneventfully. I remember that. That was a big slogan until 73. The Jews are through in 72. Black riots slowed and practically ceased. The economy certainly worsened, but it did not collapse. The government, the society, and the country itself is becoming more and more like one big, giant, pulsating blob of stinking, noxious Jew. The next major landmark in time, 1984, is behind us, and I'm betting strong that one of the favorites of the fakers, 1988, will come and go likewise and hardly even be noticed. I wasn't long in figuring out that it really meant sticking your neck way out to venture to put a date on practically anything of a social historic nature. I agree with that. It's gambling of the worst sort unless you yourself have the means at hand to force the issue according to your own timetable. Remember all these preachers that are going that the end of the world is coming? And remember the Bob Comet that all those, there were what, about 12 or 15 of those idiots within about 20 miles of where I lived in California, laid up there and took Kool-Aid and committed suicide because they're going to get on the Hale-Bopp comet. You see, the country and the world is full of insane people. And some of them are so believable that they get a lot of people to follow them. Some type of mesmeration or hypnotism. I have all the professional hypnotist books here, and we may go into that one of these days, too. I think that I believe pretty much firmly in the Manchurian candidate situation that goes on, I think, more than we'd like to know. I've been seriously suspicious of people like John McCain, to be perfectly honest, because they had him under Vietnamese and Chinese control for some time. And the way he acts, either I think he's going off his rocker or maybe he's meant to do what he's doing. If you remember the original movie with Frank Sinatra in The Manchurian Candidate, it was the liberal Democrat types that were made to look like they were treasonous and against the country, when it turned out that the real bad guys and the Manchurian candidate were in the right wing. And I can believe that. I can believe that. It's believable. It is simply that there has never before existed a more controlled environment than the one in which we exist today. Things don't just happen anymore. If they don't come off Big Brother's drawing board, then they're not sanctioned. And most of the time, they don't take place at all. Or if they do, they're of a nature hardly worthy of note. Big Brother is in control. This plus the fact that the population doesn't give a damn. Now, this was back in the 80s or mid-80s he wrote this. Things are slipping constantly, gradually, but no significant upsets are being allowed that might either alarm the population or provide the revolutionist an opening to take advantage of. I don't expect it to change unless someone changes it. In fact, as well as in theory, we're in a period of beyond 1984. From here on out, we can forget about even George Orwell. Of course, the astute have been aware of this all along, that 1984 had come into effect long before it ever arrived on the calendar. And I, for one, about a decade ago, abandoned the emergency school of thought. That is, betting in favor of and preparing for something of a sudden and fixed nature to occur to transform the situation, something which has to be braced for, weathered in a comparatively short if harsh period, and then to emerge from on the dawn of a new day. I do favor full preparation for a lights-out type emergency, but that would probably be a rather long duration, and again, short-term thinking is useless. The whole thought was false all along, but up until perhaps this decade, the majority could have claimed ignorance. I began to sense the true nature of the situation, as I said, about 10 years ago, mainly because of the experience born of intense involvement in the revolutionary activity and thought. But for the rest, the object lessons are all there now. Many can't grasp it. No one really wants to realize such a fact. But there are also plenty who refuse to be parted from their fun and games. Like children, they expect and want it all now. Well, I was reading James Mason's monthly bulletins all the way through before this book was even put together. So I had begun to go down the Mason road a long time ago. What we face is not an emergency, nothing of a romantic, extraordinary nature, but rather an infinite period of what Warren G. Harding would term normalcy. I know that taken individually or collectively, the manifestations of contemporary society are anything but normal to us, but as far as the great numbers and great periods of time are concerned, they're quite normal indeed. Therefore, we are abnormal and out of place. We have always been such, except that until now, most have figured that Der Tag was just around the corner, which would turn things topsy-turvy in our favor. That is not about to happen anytime soon. What it means for each of us is this: as long as there was hope, real or imagined, of a sudden change in the basic course of things, then we could almost afford to hide behind our unreal attitude and approach the situation with a "you'll see" thought guiding us. Presently, it has to be clear to all that nothing of the sort is going to be allowed to happen, and events are going to maintain a strictly business-as-usual complexion for the foreseeable future. And it's impossible to hide behind an abnormal strategy for very long in a stolidly normal environment where nothing out of the ordinary is permitted to happen. It should be added right away that those who do continue to go on in the manner of the past do so as utter and complete fools. Are you going to go on kidding yourself, telling yourself that you'll be ready for it when it comes? If you're a reactionary and a right-wing type, then it may well require a sudden emergency to get you off your ass. But if you are a revolutionary, then for you, it is here right now and always has been here. Right around you. You were born into, and unless you kill it, it's going to kill you. Having nothing initially to do with the name of this publication, what we have to adapt to is not a sudden emergency and then back to normal, but instead a state of siege. The system will fall one day, the empire. But when? Certainly no time soon. I've said often in the past that the winner of this race, this Death Watch 2000, will be the one who finishes last. So it's up to each of us individually to see that we outlast the system. And you don't accomplish this by merely stockpiling anything, unless you're prepared to become a hermit for the next 50 years or so. You military buffs should already know that a static defense went out with the 19th century, and that now it's all up to the fast and the resourceful. What must our definition of victory now become? To have survived another day, another year, to exist in amongst the system, but not as a consumer, not as a statistics or a victim, to exist decently and to be sure to keep the wolves away from the door. If you're living smart, as you should be, you've already eliminated coloreds and criminals from your uppermost list and have gotten down to the very basics of defending against the real enemy, the capitalist foreclosures. The old right-wing types will know how to deal with a violent one-on-one situation, but how about ever-encroaching system? Here is where you have to become smart. Commander Rockwell said that the purpose of life was to struggle as hard as you can for what you believe in and enjoy the fight. You cannot fight to your fullest potential for what you believe in while being full-time slave helping to bolster the pig economy. And you certainly can't enjoy your fight existing under the unrelenting social and economic pressure. The herds and armies of the zombie-eyed clones out there cannot or will not see that there is an alternative. The revolutionary will always find or make his own alternative. It is being done, and in this lies not only the definition of short-term victory, but the promise of ultimate victory one day. We will live. We will outlive the system. And should we individually not make it all the way, then we will not have been cheated, for we will have had our share. Living within the beast system as a revolutionary day to day, Tom Metzger calls it lone wolf, is the real emergency, and it calls for emergency measures to be taken on a routine basis. To be able to exist, thus is victory. Well, of course, this is what I've been basically preaching ever since I read Mason's Siege a long time ago, And, of course, it got me a lot of trouble with the right wing. This philosophy doesn't call for yearly meetings and joining organizations and getting cards and membership cards and stockpiling, you know, tons of ammunition, all that kind of stuff. And so that doesn't fit into the right wing motif. And so anybody that says, you know, it's just going to be a long, protracted battle for the most part, we'll wait for the empire to eat its own tail. In the meantime, live as much as a revolutionary as you can. This is why I keep preaching to guys, don't go half-cocked and do crazy things that get you put in prison for years and years, and it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. I mean, even right now or in the past, shooting politicians, well, even though you might be thrilled if somebody did, but that there's hundreds of other politicians that stand on their body waiting to get their jobs. So you can't fight it that way, at least at the present time. So the time has to come when the system is falling apart all over the place. And then things will begin to happen, but not until. And that is the end of our class for today. You can go out in the playground and swing, and or on the teeter-totters or the merry-go-round. Wait a minute, I'm wrong. You're on the merry-go-round right now. If you're alive in this crazy nation, you're on the merry-go-round. So get off the goddamn merry-go-round and join the lone wolves and bide your time. And in the process, if you can deteriorate the system or the system's plans, well, do as much as you can without sacrificing yourself totally. I get a laugh out of the right-wing racial movement because they keep saying, oh, what's this lone wolf? Oh, yeah, that's just an excuse not to do anything. Well, would you say that of forces of Al-Qaeda or forces of guerrillas over the decades in other countries who've been just individuals stuck around in the woods or small cells? So you see, anybody can say that, oh, well, since it's secret, they're probably not doing anything. Well, what do you mean? What are they doing? Are they running around blowing up things? No, they're digging in. They're keeping as good a job as they can. They're feeding their family. They're ideologically up to date. Their physical situation is up to date. They're not going crazy and running up to Idaho and living on top of a mountain in a log cabin. But they are taking care of their situation. And that's what a lone wolf does. So all you people, naysayers out there that say, well, unless you join an organization and march around the street with a uniform and waving the flags, you ain't doing nothing, man. If you're not on these chat boards every day telling everybody what for and exchanging your ideas with the local FBI agent who's also on the chat board, well, you ain't doing nothing. And a real lone wolf is sure as hell not going to come out and identify himself or tell you, even if his identity is known, and going to tell you, well, this is what I'm doing. I wrote it all down here for you, and you can check it over, Mr. Right Wing Man, and tell me what I did right and what I did wrong. No, that's not going to happen. Like I said over and over and over again, and Lenin said it, and he was a pretty damn good tactician. Worse is better. A lot of people want to argue with that, but I say that makes sense to a revolutionary who wants to get rid of the whole damn rotten system. Worse is better for now. For instance, here's information just came in from a lone wolf up there in Las Vegas. Nevadans' personal finances improved little over the past year and remain among the worst in the country, a new report found. Some 55.6% of the households statewide are in a persistent state of financial insecurity, as they have little or no savings to cover basic expenses in the event of job loss, health crisis, or other emergencies, according to the Nonprofit Corporation for Enterprise Development. Well, if that, you know, that's why I get a kick out of people who call themselves middle class, because if you don't have enough cash to last you a full year without having a job, you're not in the middle class. And how many people are in the middle class with all their mortgages and everything? But the main problem with the people is debt. They allow themselves to sink into debt and credit card debt. And if you have any understanding of lasting out this situation, you've got to understand, stay out of debt or have very little debt. Don't build up credit card debt. If you're living close to the line, and it says here a family of four would need about $5,900 in savings to carry them for 3 months. But more and more middle-class homes in Nevada fall short of that amount, which means, of course, they're not middle-class at all. Now, how many people, well, I don't know, but nobody tells me how much money they got, but do you believe that most of the people around in your community have got almost $6,000 in savings? I don't think so. I don't think they have $100 in savings, and they're still going in debt. So debt is slavery. And until you get that through your head, people are going to be slaves, and there's nothing to do about it because they're going out there and buying. I see houses out here zero down, cars zero down, everything, and the sheep and the lemmings fall right into the Jew-type capitalist, predatory capitalist trap. So get out of the trap. If you're going to use a credit card, use it to make money, not to be in debt. Yesterday I was talking to a young mechanic that I took one of our cars to, and he obviously doesn't have a pot to piss in, to be perfectly honest and crude about it. But he was telling me how he went out and spent $1,000 on a washing machine. Maybe he got a dryer too, but it sounded to me like he just got a washing machine, one of these new fancy washing machines that weigh your clothes before it starts washing it, and it knows exactly how much water to put in and all that stuff. And I said, well, all the washing machines I ever knew about had a light load, middle load, and high load. Why do you need that? Oh, well, this is the latest thing. I said, what, you got a problem with it? Yeah, it broke down. I said, you're still paying on it, aren't you? He said, yeah. He said, well, my boy put his jeans in there and left a leg hanging out and closed the door. The thing went out round and round and ripped the pants all up and screwed the machine, screwed the pooch. And I said, well, you got any way of going in there and seeing whether it's got a circuit breaker? Oh, I don't know nothing about that stuff. I'm gonna take it down there to the repair shop. So why do you need a $1,000 washing machine? I never spend over $150 for a washing machine, and when it quits, I just dump it or take it down to the metal recycling place, and they pay me quite a bit for all that metal. Same way with dryers and of course cars too. Why are you going out there and buying new cars and paying all these damn interest rates and the whole bit? Well, he sort of looked at me like a deer caught in the headlights, you know. Well, I think it's the thing to do. And I said, oh, okay. I was watching a movie the other night. It was a good damn movie. McDonnelly, or what's that guy's name? McConnelly or something. Anyhow, the movie was named Mud. Damn good movie, but there was a part in there. These people lived along the Mississippi River, or I think it was the Mississippi. They lived in little boathouses on the water. And the government was trying to put him out of business. But the point was that the one guy was saying, see that ceiling fan up there on the ceiling? And the kid says, yeah. Well, hell, I got that out of the river. It just come floating down the river. You know, there's all kinds of good stuff comes floating down the river. And I just grab it and fix it, clean it up, and use it. There's a lot of garbage, too, but there's a lot of good stuff. So I mean, a lot of people would be too proud. Oh, no, I wouldn't fish any goddamn fan out of the river and clean it up and use it. What would my highfalutin neighbors say? Well, you know what I say about my highfalutin neighbors? I got a bunch of them down here about a mile away from me in their big $300,000, $400,000 houses. They go by me here on the road with their Lexus and their Escalades and all that, and I laugh. I laugh because they're out there before dawn every morning going out to cut the mustard, man, running to work, punching the clock, all that shit. And they're never in their houses hardly at all. Maybe they're there a few hours at night and sleep. You never see their kids out in the yard playing or anything. And so what's it all about, Alfie? I know we've got a lot of lone wolves, and they've told me they go around, they hunt and gather like I do and like my gal does, and garage sales, all that kind of stuff. And they got warehouses around here full of used stuff that are very good and very cheap. But a lot of people have this pride thing that, oh my goodness, using something used that somebody else used. Oh man, it's you know, a lot of people in a hard situation are going to starve to death in this country. And I was watching a show yesterday on Russian TV, a documentary on now they've got their debt collectors running all over Russia, to the point where a lot of those people are saying, I think I'd be better off back under communism. But anyhow, they got debt collectors now running all over the place, and these people, they get them in debt, and then all of a sudden, and these people don't have hardly have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And the debt collectors are coming around seizing anything that's left. I mean, you know, any little thing that they've got, the debt collectors are picking them up, and also they're throwing them in jail and the whole bit. And so some of these people were talked into by their employers of signing notes because the employer said, well, you're not going to have a job unless you help me get a loan. And then the employer defaults on the loan, and then those workers who signed the papers to help the owner stay above water, and then the owner skips town. That's happening all over Russia now. So they're being re-Judaized, you know. They're being re-Judaized all over the Soviet Union now. And they have regular, almost a police corps that goes out and seizes stuff and itemizes everything, and they get pretty rough if you don't pay up. Well, I'm not sure whether this is about this weekend or the weekend past, but John Boehner, that alcoholic from Iowa or Ohio, that Speaker of the House, will unveil a proposal to grant amnesty to 11 to 12 million illegal aliens when Republicans emerge from a closed-door meeting this weekend. Now, that's going to be interesting because it's at least double that. You know, if they're saying 11 to 12 million, it's 20 million. And so the Republicans, as usual, are getting ready to cave in. And then they don't realize why the party's falling apart, why the party's going to disintegrate. And then on down here, so you already heard the news, but what you probably haven't heard is the opposition to Boehner's amnesty scheme within the Republican caucus is starting to mount rapidly. And grassroots pressure from patriotic Americans, I hate that word, patriotic, like you can stop this Boehner amnesty scheme dead in the tracks. We got a lot of things you need to stop. This Pacific trade agreement is probably right up there with the illegal alien problem. And they're trying to fast track this Pacific trade agreement, which will be worse than NAFTA. And what's his name from Nevada, the head of the party there, he's come out yesterday against it. You know, that little toad, little Mr. Peepers there, that Democrat. So anyhow, we're looking for this to maybe happen, that they're going to make a deal to let the illegal aliens all be citizens and go to your school and move over, boy, because they're going to even have more of your jobs. And and then the TPP, or the Pacific Trade Agreement, that's going to bend over, baby. We're coming at you again. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, worse is better. Let her go. Let her fall. Republicans, bye-bye. Now, Barack Obama has already jumped on Mr. Boehner's capitulation to his amnesty agenda. within days of word getting out that Boehner was on board with amnesty, Barack Obama's Homeland Security Secretary, Jay Johnson, who happens to be a Negro, suddenly upped the ante and proclaimed that approximately 11 million people who are in the country illegally have earned the right to be citizens by taking your jobs, taking rental property, and everything else. They've earned that, you know. That's a weird way of earning it. You read right, and you read that right. If you want to earn the right to be a citizen of the United States, all you have to do is violate our laws. Well, there is no law. They're not returning hardly any of them. Or even if they return thousands of them a month, that would just scratch the surface. And then don't forget about the Middle Easterners who are flooding across our southern border. Yes, Middle Easterners, Arabs, Islamics are flooding across our southern border because the guys down there on the border are picking up all these prayer shawls and all kinds of Islamic stuff that they discard going across the desert. And there are probably a whole lot of terrorists involved in that, so whoopee. And the very second Boehner announced his willingness to capitulate, Team Obama started working on the next capitulation. But we shouldn't be shocked. Barack Obama has been using his pen and his phone to violate the laws that he has sworn to enforce for years. Well, all the presidents do that. All of them do it. Case in point, Breitbart reports that a Syracuse University study indicates that deportation cases that are being closed due to prosecutorial discretion is up over 70%. So in other words, 70% of the illegal aliens are already off the hook. In plain English, that means the Obama regime is choosing not to prosecute greater and greater numbers of illegal aliens for no apparent reason. Well, of course, we knew this would all happen. You know, I've spent years fighting this damn illegal alien thing, and it didn't get me very far, I'll tell you that. In plain English, that means that the Obama regime is choosing not to prosecute greater and greater numbers of illegal aliens for no apparent reason. Well, we know the apparent reason. They want these people in here, and they think they can control them as voters. But they're going to find out that they're going to tribalize, just like a lot of other racial and national people, and they will become a force to reckon with, probably Al-Qaeda-type guerrilla operations. And you can't tell me that if you bring people in from Syria and people from Afghanistan and people from Iraq that hate each other, they're not going to stop hating each other just because they moved into the United States. So there's going to be warfare as time goes on. Considering Mr. Obama's lawlessness when it comes to enforcing our immigration laws, Boehner's amnesty capitulation is a spit in the face to patriotic Americans, and it's time to let your elected officials know exactly how you feel. They don't care how you feel. I write them letters myself and stuff like that. They don't care. Do you understand? They know that you're not going to do anything drastic about it. So they don't care how much you whine and cry. They serve the ruling class. Don't forget that. Follow the money. They work with the ruling class, and they're not going to betray the ruling class, both Obama and the Republicans. And these guys, the Republicans now that whine about everything Obama does, there's not much that Obama's done that the Republican administrations and the Bush crime family didn't do a lot worse. So I have no sympathy at all for the National Republican Committee. I hope they crash and burn, and I hope they, in their big deal to recruit Mexicans, everybody's afraid they're not going to recruit Mexicans, and they don't seem to understand how poor the voting record is of Mexicans and even blacks. If it hadn't been for Obama being black, you think that there would have been a big outpouring of blacks voting in the last two elections? Hell no. Hell no! Well, that's about it for today. I've about expanded and exhausted my exuberance. And to all you she-wolves out there, you have a good day. This is your day. This is your day. Me and Squeeze and I went out to a place where they have karaoke last night, and I had a good time. They asked me, guys, there's a guy committed suicide, a young guy only 32 years old, and they told me about him. They wanted me to sing a song for him, and I did. But I couldn't believe here's a 32-year-old guy committing suicide. Went down the basement of his house and hung himself. Jeez. Oh, you wonder what goes through people's minds. That the guy said he thought it was about his wife or his girlfriend or something. I said, well, no, that's supposed to work the other way around. If you got troubles with your girlfriend, get her to commit suicide. Don't you commit suicide. Just kidding.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails.
Gene 5.